Khan, and welcome to Husky Nation News, right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Your broadcast today is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus. I'm your host, Caroline LaCour, and here's the news of the week for the University of Connecticut. Eddie Hall at the University of Connecticut has been placed under quarantine due to a rapid spike of coronavirus cases in the building. Daily Campus correspondent Connor Caridad writes that, according to an email sent out to residents last Sunday, there have been four positive cases found in the hall. Three of the four cases were identified through pooled sampling the university has been conducting within many other residence halls. Residents of Eddie Hall will be contacted by Student Health and Wellness, as well as the Dean of Students, for quarantine updates and guidelines. UConn has hired three faculty members to be a part of a new health disparities cluster, researching how different identities affect the health of an individual. Faculty members in the cluster each come from Human Development and Family Studies, Anthropology, and Sociology departments. Ryan Talbert is a professor of sociology at the University of Connecticut and said in an interview with Grace McFadden of the Daily Campus, "Critical race theory tells us in part that racism is ubiquitous and normative. In other words, racism pervades all aspects of social life, from where folks reside, work, and socialize, to the quality of life, access to healthcare, and number of years that people live. My research applies to these insights to examine racial inequities in health." Popular UConn staff member Louis Soup Dupe Diaz is temporarily leaving the Union Street Market to work at Towers Dining Hall. According to the Daily Campus correspondent Luke Hasdash, Diaz, as well as others, will be temporarily transferred to cover vacant shifts in dining halls. UConn spokesperson Stephanie Reitz notes that general lack of business in retail food service areas on campus is a contributing factor to the change as well. Diaz gave a comment for the Daily Campus, "I feel a little different because I've been at the Union for 13 years, so yes, I'm gonna miss it." UConn takes a stand against hazing this week for National Hazing Prevention Week. The Center of Fraternity and Sorority Development, CFSD, at UConn is taking the initiative to provide students with the skills to recognize and prevent different hazing practices. In the article written by Emma Gehr of the Daily Campus, "Hazing is a common action associated with clubs, teams, and organizations, especially Greek life communities, and has garnered national attention for the frequent reports of serious injuries and death that have resulted from hazing practices." National Voter Registration Day arrived this Wednesday, and Ian Ward of the Daily Campus has all the information you need to know to prepare for the 2020 elections. According to a study by the National Census Bureau, around 49% of 18 to 24-year-olds were registered to vote in 2018, which was down 6 percentage points from 2016. The age group with the highest percentage of registered voters in 2018 was 65 to 74-year-olds, at almost 75%. In Connecticut, around 68% of residents are registered to vote, compared to the 61.5% of voters nationwide, according to Tufts University. For all you college kids, the deadline to register to vote in by mail in Connecticut is October 27th. The Tampa Bay Lightning has scored Game 2 against the Dallas Stars in the Stanley Cup Finals Monday night. Tim Keaton of the Daily Campus has our play-by-play of what first looked like a strong beginning for Tampa Bay ended up being a dynamic play for Dallas as they strived to get ahead in the second period, scoring two goals. In an interview with the Tampa Bay head coach, John Cooper, he said, "We're in the Stanley Cup final. You've got a 3-0 lead and you give up two. The one thing that this team has done is they just never put themselves in panic mode. Instead of trying to protect the lead, they went out there and actually kind of took it to them. Not in the sense that we were trying to score, but we were completely engaged. It was really calm on the bench. It's just our attitude." This leaves both teams tied in the Stanley Cup final, with the next game scheduled for September 23rd. For our feature story of the week, UConn Student Union Board of Governors, or SUBOG, held a live-streamed event from the Jorgensen Center for the Performing Arts on September 9th, where the five men from the Central Park 5 case recalled their experiences over 31 years ago. Selena Daigle has the story.
From the Central Park 5 to the Exonerated 5, by Selena Daigle. On the night of April 19th, 1989, five young and innocent men were arrested and soon to be falsely convicted for the attack and rape of Trisha Mealy, a 28-year-old white woman jogging through Central Park. On that night, the case against the Central Park Five was born. These five young men of color consisted of 14-year-olds Kevin Richardson and Raymond Santana, 15-year-olds Yusuf Salam and Antron McCray, and 16-year-old Corey Wise. Now, a little over 31 years after the Central Park jogger case began, University of Connecticut's Subog held a live-streamed event from the Jorgensen with Raymond Santana and Dr. Yusuf Salam, titled, Now They See Us, on Wednesday, September 9th. The men recounted the night that they, and the three others, went from being regular kids to becoming members of the Central Park Five. In the interview, Santana and Salam recalled being described as monsters by over 4,000 articles about their convictions. Yet, the moment their truth came out, nothing more than a whisper was heard by the world. They each highlighted key details from that spring night. Quote, people have to understand, we were 14, 15-year-old kids who have never experienced this. We didn't know about Miranda rights, about tricks on law and order that are used on us. End quote, Santana said. He said he remembers going 15 to 30 hours without eating, sleeping, or drinking, and feeling as if he was, quote, backed into a corner, end quote. Santana said, quote, as a 14-year-old kid, the pressure is on, end quote. Salam added on to Santana's statement, expressing his opinion as he said, quote, when you look like me and Raymond, they automatically perceive you as guilty, end quote, alluding to the color of their skin. After 9 p.m. that April evening of the attack, more than 30 teenagers gathered together in Central Park. Two of these young men were Richardson and Santana. When a male jogger was found beaten by the group of teens, an immediate public outcry began, and police scavenged to arrest anyone who they suspected to be involved in that attack. A few hours later, Mealy's body was found, and the interrogation of Richardson, Santana, Salam, McCray, and Wise began. Four of the five boys confessed on camera to committing the crime of Mealy's rape after hours of aggressive interrogation and coercion, although they had never seen her that night, nor did their stories all line up. Richardson, Santana, Salam, and McCray were convicted within the juvenile court, while Wise, being 16, was charged as an adult. They each spent between 5 and 12 years behind bars, before all of them were officially exonerated in 2002. When the real rapist, Matias Reyes, who was already serving time for his known accounts as a serial rapist and murderer, came forward. It took almost 13 years for the truth to come out about the men. Over that time, a few of them got their GEDs while incarcerated, while others, likewise, struggled while being just a teenager in Rikers Island Prison. In the back half of the interview, Santana and Salam discussed the creation of the Netflix documentary about their experience, When They See Us. Quote, this was the truth we had to relive because it was necessary, Santana said. There were children who didn't know who the Central Park Five were, end quote. And so, he reached out to producer and writer Ava DuVernay, who, with the help of the four other convicted men, worked to create an accurate representation of the Central Park jogger case. Their story as a Central Park Five became the Exonerated Five, as they like to call themselves now. To fully portray the experiences that Richardson, Wise, Santana, Salam, and McCray went through, there were grief counselors on set to help the actors become the original Central Park Five. As such a hit on Netflix, an impactful story, the film has been produced in over 190 languages. As the event concluded, Santana and Salam answered a few questions by UConn students. Student Catherine Morris asked, quote, what advice would you give black women abolitionists? End quote. Quote, we have the power to fight, we have the power to win, Santana said, quoting Asada Shakur. We must love each other and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains. End quote. They said that being black young men affected how McCray, Santana, Richardson, Wise, and Salam were treated by the justice system. No one truly listened to the words that they had to say or paid any attention to the key details that proved their innocence immediately. All that the world saw were five black boys and one white woman. Nothing else had to be said for the court to have decided who was guilty of the crime. According to Santana, there will be a new America someday, and it will represent the kaleidoscope of families that Martin Luther King Jr. once envisioned.
Weather for the next few days for the stores and Mansfield area looks mostly sunny on Thursday with a high of 77 and a low of 56, with sunny skies on Friday with a high of 77 and a low of 56, so don't whip out those seasonal sweaters just yet. Sunny weather is still ahead. Up next, I sit down with Omar Jabril and Colt Nichols about the defacing of Spirit Rock this past weekend. From this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensees of WHUS Radio or of the University of Connecticut. Okay, so I'm just gonna get right into it. So I have here Omar and Colt. Welcome to Husky Nation News.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Could you guys tell me what your majors are and what year you are?
I am a senior. I am a psychology and Arabic major.
I'm senior as well, and I'm studying electrical and biomedical engineering.
And you guys are on campus? Are you guys off campus? Where are you calling from?
We live off campus. We live together in a house off campus. It's literally just a mile off campus, real close.
Yeah. I assume you guys are friends.
On a good day, yeah, we're friends. We're both on the track and field team here, so we met through track a couple years ago, and yeah, now we live together.
Okay, sweet. Do you guys have in-person classes?
I'm mostly online. I have three online, two in person.
Yeah, I'm mostly online. I have some laboratories that I have to go to in person.
Okay. Yeah, I have all online classes, but it's rough, but, you know, you got to get through it, you know?
Yeah, it definitely is something strange. I've never seen it like this before.
Yeah, it's definitely something to get used to, but hopefully not for too long. Okay, I'm just going to get right into things. So this past weekend, Spirit Rock near North Garage was vandalized this past weekend. A Black Lives Matter message was on the rock and someone defaced it to say All Lives Matter, I believe. And these two decided to repaint it. So Spirit Rock is painted at UConn. It's a tradition. And I think there's three rocks around campus. There are specific guidelines, and the messages painted are supposed to foster pride and, like, school spirit. This actually wasn't the first time the Black Lives Matter message was defaced on Spirit Rock. It actually was defaced before, back in 2015, which isn't the best. So when did you first hear that Spirit Rock was defaced? I think I heard it around, like, Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, about the same, probably Sunday around noon. Just a little background. I'm on SAC, which is a student athlete advisory committee. I'm on SAC as I'm the diversity and inclusion chair. So me and my co-chair Morocco Wiley, we were the ones that essentially painted the rock Black Lives Matter about a month ago, and all was good for about a month, and then about on Sunday at about noon, I got a text saying that it was somebody had written over, someone vandalized it. To be honest, at first I didn't really believe it. But then I told Cole about it because obviously we live together, and I told him that, hey, if this is true, I'm gonna go fix it, and Cole offered to come, and that's about the timeline right there.
It's a great thing that you took action and fixed it, of course. A lot of people are having kind of mixed feelings on UConn president Tom Katsoulias' statement that he issued, I think, Sunday afternoon. A little excerpt that from the message was, he said, "Someday in an ideal world, maybe all lives will matter equally, but for too long, Black lives have suffered discrimination and racism." He said he's sorry to see Spirit Rock altered as it was today, or this past weekend, and the insensitivity to that context that it represents. What was your initial reaction to the president's message? Have you heard of this message?
We saw that message after we fixed the rock and everything. I don't know much about the statement myself, but I did see a lot of people post that they were disappointed that the statement wasn't as strong as they would have liked, or that it didn't condemn the vandalism for what it was, instead of speaking of it as an alteration. So I definitely think that most people thought that what happened to The Rock was not just insensitive alteration, but it was like an act of vandalism and disrespect or hate, anything along those lines.
Yeah, and I know kind of like a reaction to that. I've heard this before, and to be honest, I feel kind of similar to it. I can relate to it, I guess. It's, I mean, technically, there's nothing, I guess, wrong that he said, but just a lot of people, including myself, thought it was just kind of a little, it was more of like a, almost like more of like a slap on the wrist kind of thing, where a lot of people were expecting it, a statement from him to kind of be more of a statement saying that we are planning on taking action. A lot of people, I mean, to be honest, I don't know what can be done in terms of like kind of like an investigation kind of thing, but I know a lot of people were hoping that his statement would include something like that, saying that there's action will be taken, consequences will be dealt, and that kind of thing. And the fact that his statement didn't include that, I know, ruffled some feathers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm surprised that I'm not exactly sure, but back in 2015 when Spirit Rock was defaced, I wonder if they had any implications to whoever did that. I think I read somewhere that there's some sort of, I mean, there's guidelines to, you can't alter a message. You have to paint The Rock entirely if you want to change it. So,
in terms of The Rock, I mean, it's really for the most part, it's mostly like a free for all kind of thing. There's not that many policies/rules in terms of obviously keeping appropriate, nothing hateful, nothing. And but the main thing is just if you want to paint The Rock, you obviously can do so. It's for the students, but if you were to do that, then it's you have to, whatever is on there, you completely replace it, and you're not allowed to just have like cross out a portion of it or take use what they're using and add to it. Like, if you want to change it, you have to completely change it, and obviously that was not done. So in terms of, I technically, like, from like a legal standpoint, technically no like laws were broken, but yeah, they do. UConn does have a Spirit Rock policy where if you want to change a rock, you have to change it in its entirety rather than alter a previous message.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Another thing is a lot of students on campus at UConn have kind of been getting a lot of their news from the Instagram UConn Memory. And I saw that I think you guys reached out to them because there was a confusion that people thought that you guys vandalized The Rock, but in fact, you guys were fixing it. Could you give me like a rundown of that confusion?
Yeah, that is true. We luckily had not just UConn Memories, but a lot of organizations' social media accounts helped clear the air on that.
Mm-hmm.
But while we were painting The Rock, and this is something that neither Omar or I thought of when we went out to go fix it. We just wanted to get it fixed as soon as possible. But for some people driving by or walking by, once we started covering up the vandalism, it sure looked like we were covering up the initial message. So we had some people yell in their cars or whatever.
Luckily, most people
yelled some nasty things or whatever, but luckily most people stopped, and they were, you know, it was
kind of asked like, what are you doing? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, it didn't take long for them to realize that we were doing a positive thing. But there was at least like one or two people that didn't take the time to figure out what actually was going on, and they took pictures, particularly of me. I didn't hear anything about Omar being put on social media, but yeah, they took pictures of us, or they found out who we were, and they posted like my name or like my roster picture, because of my, I suppose it was fairly easy to figure out who I was based on my involvement with the school's athletics program.
Yeah, wow.
So for a short amount of time, I think there was some false accusations going up on Twitter and whatnot, and I don't have Twitter. So luckily some people pointed it out to me, and it was already taken down before I heard about it. But
Okay, well, it's good to get that clarification.
Yes.
So, last but not least, if you guys have any anything else that you'd like to share, if you guys want to say anything to the people who altered the rock, or anything that you'd want to share.
Most people, like, obviously there's a lot of ways to, I guess, kind of combat racism and social injustice in our country. Obviously there's some people that turn to violence. Some people, there's obviously, you've seen, like, violent protests. There's stuff like looting, stuff like that. I mean, I can see where people would have an issue with violent protests and thing like that. But with the rock, that's essentially the simplest and least violent, not at all violent, it's the simplest form of protest, where you're essentially just making a sign and it's put in a place where people drive by and they see it, and that's it. Nothing hateful was written on there, nothing, just three words, Black Lives Matter. And I think it just kind of speaks a lot that somebody had a big enough issue with those three words that they felt they need to vandalize it. And I mean, obviously we don't know what the person that didn't, obviously we don't know what they were thinking, but I mean they could have done a bunch of things. They could have crossed it out, they could have wrote slurs on there and stuff like that, but what they did do is cross out black and wrote all to make it read All Lives Matter. And so you can probably get like a little kind of like a sense of what they were thinking, and the fact that yes, all lives do matter. Everyone believes that, or at least everyone should believe that. I believe that. I know all lives matter. But in recent and in farther back history, black lives have never been counted in the whole all lives matter movement kind of thing. And so that's why people do say Black Lives Matter. A lot of people, when we say Black Lives Matter, I feel like a lot of uneducated people hear only Black Lives Matter.
Exactly.
Nobody's saying only Black Lives Matter, and nobody believes that. That's not the case at all. We just want Black lives to matter equally as much as all other lives. And I think it comes down to a lack of education as to what Black Lives Matter actually stands for. Nobody's saying Black Lives Matter more than other lives. We're just saying Black lives also matter. And it's hurtful to see that kind of stuff be vandalized, because it's just, I mean, I don't know what the person was thinking, but I think a lot of people, when they hear something about the Black Lives Matter movement, they think that it's essentially an anti-white movement, which just isn't the case at all. And so, I mean, obviously not trying to justify what was done at all, but it's just, I think it comes down to a lack of education. And I think if people actually took the time out to try to educate themselves about certain organizations, and if people tried to take time out to educate themselves about things that are going on, they'd realize that Black Lives Matter is just a fight for equality rather than anti-white movement.
Well said. Definitely well said. Okay, that's all I have for you guys. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Okay, see you later, guys. Well, there you have it, folks. That's the end of our show. A big thank you to The Daily Campus and Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Caroline LaCour, and you've been listening to Husky Nation News only on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have a great rest of your day.